welcome to A Chat in the Garden with Monique A.J. Smith, where Smith is bloomed in athletics and sports. I'm excited about being with you on March the 1st, 2023, the first day of Women's History Month. And time is moving, I'm telling you. And so last week you did have a replay because I had the pleasure of being honored by the CIAA, and it was truly an experience. They got your girl, let's just put it like that. I knew I was being honored, but some of the ways that they did honor us was such an amazing experience and would be something that I would never forget. So thank you to Commissioner Jackie McWilliams Parker and to VP Tanya Walker for hosting myself, Dianthea Ford Key, Dr. Ingrid Wicker McCree, and D. Todd. And I want to do a special shout out to Tamika Smith-Jones, who served as our host. Can you imagine four women of leadership all at one time who have planned events, who have been in the business for over 30 years and plus, all trying to go into one direction? No, we need to go that way. No, we came down this way, losing our cars, and then after we decided we shouldn't drive anymore, we take an Uber, and everybody can't get on the same page and get an Uber at the same time. Carly, where are you? I will tell you, it was the best adult time I've had with friends. I mean, it was great. Not even talking about the great basketball we had. And to see my former student play in the semifinals as a coach. It's just the thoughts, the things that you see. Seeing my other former student do the PA for the conference championship. Oh, my goodness. So my St. Paul's people surprised me and showed up, and It was just a good, good time. Also want to shout out, Saul had a chance to see my mentor, Laverne Sweat, P. Laverne Sweat, 1988. I was an intern for the CIAA, and she was the first president of the CIAA. First female president of the CIAA. And I just saw this lady just pouncing around with her sparkles on, leading all of the events, you know, on the floor with the check presentations. I was like, who is she? And I want to do what she is doing. And so it was so good. She's now 85 years old. And her husband was there, Coach James Sweat, with the 1988 Division II National Championship team. They were being inducted into the CIAA. And so got a chance to see some old Hamptonians because, again, I was in school with these ladies. And so I had a ball. I had a ball. So just wanted to share that with you all. On this March 1st, the first day of the Women's History Month of 2023, got some announcements for you all. WeCoach has partnered with the HBCU High School Unsigned Singing Showcase, which is to take place April 23rd at the Boo Williams Sportsplex from 3 to 7 p.m. The WeCoach will provide a pre-event for the women's coaches and attendants of the celebration of 50th anniversary of Title IX. WeCoach will have a meet and greet and a panel discussion from 12 to 2 at the Blue Wheel Sportsplex Multipurpose Room. The panel is called Level Up. It will focus on the strategies for coaches to move to their next, from club to high school, from high school to college. This event is free to all women coaches, but you must register to attend. You must register to attend. So I'm invite you to reach out to me at Monique@BooWilliamsSportsPlex.com. Again, that's Monique@BooWilliamsSportsPlex. That's an S on Williams, an S on sports, BooWilliamsSportsPlex.com. Look forward to hosting you all in Hampton, Virginia. I'm proud to be a gold sponsor of the Hilliard Solutions 5th Annual Virtual Women in Athlete Development Symposium and Networking, April 12th and 13th. Tickets can go on, tickets are on sale now. Tickets are on sale now. Go to HilliardSolutions.com/symposium. Hilliard, H-I-L-L-I-A-R-D, solutions.com/symposium. Now, today is March 1st. I am anticipating that Amazon will let me know that we are live with our sixth issue of Significance in Athletics and Sports. We are waiting any moment now to hear that our sixth issue will be live on Amazon. And if you miss issues 1 through 5, they are already still there on Amazon. So excited about that we'll be able to bring that to you this month. And, hey, we've already closed out. Take that back. The fifth issue is what we're waiting on. The sixth issue is what I'm working on with the authors. But, yes, the fifth issue that features Afrida Golf on the cover should be live within the week on Amazon, and just really excited about that. But before it goes on Amazon, if you want to get on the first order that I get out, go to PayHip, P-A-Y-H-I-P, .com/Seeds of Empowerment to place your order for the fifth issue of Significance in Athletics. So really excited about bringing that to you all. And shortly, sometime in March, we will begin again our series on Meet the Contributors. Those contributors to the fifth issue, we'll begin with that process shortly. And that will be inside our Chat in the Garden Facebook group. Seawall Foundation is offering media training for student athletes. With name, image, and likeness on deck, this is important training. Candy Waller, the founder, has extensive background in entertainment and interviewing Seawall Sports Entertainment. Right now, as we speak, she is at the NFL Combine. So when I tell you she has expertise in this, she does. And I actually was able to see her when I was in at the CIAA. So she really is about this business. And so she has seen where there is a need to assist our student athletes in this area because she wants to prepare them for lights, camera, action so we don't have any sorry Miss Jackson moments. So for more information, go to info@seawallfoundation.org. Again, info@seawallfoundation.org. And you know I love books because I believe seeds are reads. And one of those books is called Surviving the Lights. A Professional Athlete's Playbook to Avoiding the Curse by Tawana Smith. This is another resource that is really needed in such a time as this because our young people, although they won't be professionals, they will be receiving money. And so with that comes some responsibilities to Uncle Sam, matter of fact. And they may not, and I'm pretty sure they don't know, about the obligations about that if they receive any type of income to be over $600. They have to file taxes. And interesting enough, even if they would just receive the product, that still counts. And so they need to have some people surrounding them to protect them. That's what we call the defense of name, image, and likeness, so that you can, again, avoid this curse as it relates to the title of this book. And so she mentions how to assist the young people of selecting those individuals to be on the team. And, hey, we want them to be able to benefit from name, image, and likeness, but they don't want it to allow them to take them down financially. And, of course, as it relates to eligibility. So this book, Surviving the Lights, A Professional Athlete's Playbook to Ruin the Curse by Tawana Smith, can be found on Amazon in three different formats, paperback, audio, and ebook. And I got a chance to hang out with Alva Amaker, Education and Risk Management Consultant. She owns Vigilant Safety Training Center. She believes in policy to practice. And so we were able to see each other in Baltimore. And when I tell you, she's a walking, talking assessment of avoiding issues as it relates to a sporting event. And I did get a chance for her to tell me about her thoughts about the young lady at Mississippi Valley that was a cheerleader that was off the court for confronting a basketball player in the middle of play. And so when I first saw that, I was like, I know she has some insight. So again, this is what she does. And I'm really excited about the fact that she does offer some type of assessment for you to be able to decide what area that you need to concentrate on, because I know you can't fix everything all at one time, but to prioritize where are your biggest deficiencies and potential liability areas. So the center has the following training: first responder training. You know, so we all know this is crucial to have to save lives. So something she said the other day to me, she was like, we may have a defibrillator, but do we know where it is? All right, do all your coaches know where it is? And has it been tested? So things will be tested every year. You know, just like anything, batteries go dead, that kind of thing. This is crucial. Do you even know? Can you even check that box? Sport event staff certification. These are the people that wear the what? The yellow jackets. And I understand they don't always wear yellow jackets, but even if you subcontract that out, they must know your policies and procedures. Who is doing that? Who is doing that? We were even talking about facilities and renting out and how it's going to be, I think it's a facility there that she oversees, and how it's going to be part of the booking requirement that your staff have this first responder training. Because if you're in the facility and the people who are on the facility, by the time you get to them, it's no longer a first responder. You're like second or third responder. So you need to be trained how to do it if you have rented a facility and how to go about doing that. You know, we think that we are safe by just hiring a athletic trainer for that. But everyone needs to be understand the first responder routine. Okay? And then she also provides workspace safety and personal training and operations. So if anything has piqued your interest and you need to at least get an assessment of what area you need to concentrate on, go to the website Vigilance, VigilanceCEST.com. VigilanceCEST.com to get your assessment today. This is good stuff. And so now I'm ready to bring our guest on for the hour, Dr. Courtney Gay, Assistant Athletic Director, DEI at the University of Georgia. Welcome to the garden, Dr. Gay.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm really excited to have you. Did you hear your cheers?
I did. That's great. Thank you
Absolutely.
So much. It's an honor to be here.
No problem. And so we like to just start off by letting everyone in the garden get a chance to know you. Let's start with your journey from college to your current position.
Yeah, so I've been really fortunate and blessed to have a great career path. And so I really started out when I went to undergraduate at the University of Missouri. My focus was I wanted to be a sports broadcaster. Particularly, I was like, when Pam Oliver retires, which she still has not, but I wanted to be a sideline reporter for the NFL. And so I went to the University of Missouri, got a broadcast journalism degree, but although I really enjoyed it as I got closer to graduation, I was, I realized that journalism was fantastic and I loved it, but I wanted to do something else, and so I started considering opportunities. What else could I do in sports? And so I had the opportunity to go to Texas A&M University to get my master's in sports administration or sports management. And there I served as a graduate assistant in student athlete services and career services. And I really, fell in love with that area. I love the opportunity to, help our student athletes to grow and develop and really maximize that time, in college and prepare them for life after, collegiate athletics. And so I really, I've always had a passion for helping people develop and grow and things of that nature. And so I really just found that, I enjoyed it. And so as part of my graduate experience, we had to do an internship, and I was fortunate enough to work in NFL player engagement. It was called player development at that time. And so it was really continuing the work I had the opportunity to do in college with NFL athletes, helping them with internships, complete their degrees, all of those things. And so, for my time at the NFL, although I really enjoyed my college experience, that really set me on a path to work in professional sports. And so after I completed my internship, I had the opportunity, there was the NBA, it's called the G League now. I won't age myself, but it was the NBA Development League at that time. And they were opening a franchise. I'm a Houston, Texas native, and they were opening a franchise in Fort Worth, Texas. And so I had the opportunity to go work there, help them start the franchise. And really, as with any, minor league sports team, I really had the opportunity to wear a lot of different hats. And so, my title was community relations and public relations. And so I did everything from, the statistics to writing the post-game notes to sending what we had to the league office to, being out in the community, forming relationships, group ticket sales. We had to set up the floor because, our arena was actually the convention center there. And so mm-hmm. we had to push out the Dorner boards. I'll never forget that. And so, we did corporate sales. We all did everything. But it was a phenomenal experience because it really helped me to see, the different aspects of sports and all sides of it. And so after that, I had an opportunity to move to Atlanta and joined the Atlanta Braves Community Affairs Department. And so I worked there for 6 seasons and had the great opportunity to really, you know, be a part of sports philanthropy and utilize our platform with the Braves to make a difference in the Atlanta community, and had the opportunity to, you know, help collaborate with a lot of different community partners, and we had a Braves Baseball Academy, and so I really enjoyed that work. But I also, you know, I really didn't enjoy my time in college athletics, and I knew that I at one point wanted to come back to college athletics, and so I was enjoying that opportunity, but there was a role that came open as an academic advisor at the University of Georgia, and so I decided to accept that opportunity, and it's been phenomenal. So I served as an athletic academic advisor at Georgia for 8 years, you know, working with different sports from cross country, track and field, softball, soccer, and football. And I also, while here at the University of Georgia, had the opportunity to earn my PhD in College Student Affairs Administration. So, you know, after I finished my PhD, was kind of trying to determine, you know, did I want to stay in academics? You know, what pathway? I knew I wanted to stay in college athletics. You know, I really loved it. Both of my parents, you know, worked in higher ed, so I grew up on college campuses. And so, you know, I always knew that was a passion of mine. I loved working with student athletes. So I knew, you know, I wanted to stay. And so, you know, I started kind of getting engaged in some of our student athlete development programming, you know, still serving as an academic counselor. And then, in 2020, or really 2019, you know, part of my dissertation work was around the engagement of student athletes around social justice issues. And so I became really passionate about, you know, I'd always been passionate about that and diversity and inclusion. All my roles, you know, even that wasn't my primary job focus, I always found a way to be involved in that in the organizations that I was a part of. And so, you know, I started to have the opportunity to work on some of our diversity, equity, inclusion initiatives here at the University of Georgia. And we put some things in place. So like in the spring of 2020, we launched our Student Athlete Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Council, and then a Staff Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Council. And so we were really getting those things, you know, going. And then, of course, COVID hit. And then the summer of 2020 was when, you know, there was a lot of social and racial unrest in the country. And so I really had the opportunity to really, you know, engage those of us around our athletic department as we, you know, talk through those issues as a staff with our student athletes. And so by December of 2020, our athletic department had the opportunity, they made the decision to create my current role and asked if I would be willing to serve. And, of course, I was enthusiastic about it and really, you know, had been helping with some of those initiatives. So it was really kind of a natural next step for me. And so here I am. And, you know, 2 years, you know, later, it's been a phenomenal journey, really having the opportunity to, you know, work with everyone across our organization in advancing diversity, equity, and inclusion, you know, from student athletes to staff to coaches. You know, on the academic and student services side, I had the opportunity to work more closely with specific teams, but I'm really enjoying, you know, this opportunity to be able to work with everybody across the organization and help everybody see that, you know, advancing diversity, equity, and inclusion is everybody's responsibility. And, you know, I'm fortunate that we have excellent leadership who's really supportive. And, you know, they also not just, you know, talk the talk, but they walk the walk. And so it's really been a privilege, you know, to have the opportunity to serve the Athletic Association in this way and work, you know, alongside such strong leaders who are truly and genuinely committed to advancing those in our department. And so I'm enjoying this role. And, you know, there's so many opportunities for growth. And as I always say, I have the privilege of leading our efforts, but it really is a team effort. So helping to equip and empower our staff and student athletes to be a part of this work is, you know, the major responsibility that I have, but I really am enjoying this part of my journey.
Wow. Well, I can definitely say from what I hear that you evolved into the DEI role. You had, from what you were saying before the pandemic, you began to do the research, and the research led you to contribute to committees with the same mindset of student-athlete welfare kind of issues. Now that the word is development, student athlete development. So that is that's a very impressive, because what we have seen, that people have received those type of positions, but then they might not have been prepared for the position. So can you like to just touch a little bit about your dissertation and how it prepared you for this position?
Yes, so really my goal was to explore, you know, what are some of the learning outcomes of for student athletes when they engage in, you know, social justice work, and then also what are the organizational factors that really, you know, enable student athletes to have the opportunity to engage in this work. So, you know, I was really fascinated at that point by, you know, I think it was 2015, I believe, at Missouri, my alma mater, where, you know, the football team, you know, threatened to not play a game. And so I really feel like that, combined with some other social issues that were going on in the country, you know, you really saw this uptick of student activism in general on college campuses, but especially, you know, college student athletes really saying, hey, you know, we can utilize our platform. And I think student athletes across the country took note of what the student athletes did at Missouri and, you know, really said, you know, we're going to, you know, we want to utilize our platform. You know, how can we make change? And so, you know, really my what I started to see was how I was really intrigued by how different institutions responded to student-athlete engagement around social justice issues. And it ran the gamut. You know, some institutions were really supportive. Others, you know, there's a lot of factors, including political factors, you know, other environmental factors, the leader, you know, campus and athletic leadership, et cetera, et cetera. So I really just wanted to kind of, you know, in looking at different athletic units and seeing how they responded to student athlete activism. So that was the goal. And then also to really, you know, because I truly believe that engaging around, you know, social justice issues is really a learning experience for all students. And and so I really wanted to explore, you know, both the environment in which these student athletes were engaging around these topics, and then what were the learning outcomes, just to kind of show, you know, that this is, you know, we are institutions of higher education, and, you know, we're focused on student learning. And so how are these learning opportunities for student athletes? What are those learning outcomes? So that was the focus of my research. I did a case study at an institution that had, you know, put together a very robust program and really just had the opportunity to, you know, to do that case study, and it was very intriguing and really interesting to see how, you know, this particular institution, all of those factors aligned.
Now, I was at a town hall was held during the CIAA, and there's something that crossed my mind from the standpoint, and I don't know anything about your current institution as it relates to this. It just hit me because I'm a former sitting athletic administrator, and I was of the thought, because the NCAA didn't recognize cheerleaders as a student athlete, that I was able to say that your funds would come out of student affairs instead of athletics, you know, and I didn't have any scholarship for you and whatnot. But speaking about social justice, there was a young man that was on the panel who was a cheerleader, and he was speaking about the male cheerleader, not from what my era. We had male cheerleaders, but they were more used for the stunt piece. But this was more of, I don't even know the right term to use, but he's up front, he's not in the back, not support of the female cheerleaders, but he's actually leading the cheers, and he was saying of what that he wanted, what other institutions should do, which is be a safe place. And so my question is, because when we think about social justice, we're thinking about social unrest. Does the social justice that you studied, does it include justice as it relates to gender issues as well?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, we talk about this all the time, you know, here at our institution that, you know, when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion, you know, that's both a very, you know, broad and deep. And so it includes
mm-hmm.
gender, it includes race, it includes religion, it includes socioeconomic status, you know, national origin, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, even our hobbies and interests, you know, that's one thing that everybody contributes to diversity, you know, and just by all of those different characteristics. So absolutely, you know, that's something, you know, gender equity is obviously a big piece of that, you know, making sure that our, you know, our athletes are, male and female athletes have, you know, the same equitable experience. That's a big piece
mm-hmm.
of it as well. And so, you know, it's definitely includes gender. And again, I think a lot, oftentimes when we think about social justice issues or, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion, race is at the forefront. And while that's, you know, obviously something that we need to continue to talk about and explore, you know, there's so many aspects. I did a training, for example, with our senior leaders last week about, you know, different generations. And so this is
mm-hmm.
one of the first times in, or the first time in the workplace that we have people from six generations in the workplace together.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what does that look like? What does that mean for us as team leaders? You know, our coaches are experts at this because, you know, every year, you know, they're working with different student athletes and, you know, as time passes, you know, each generation. And so they're great at adapting and really, you know, bringing a team of people together. So, you know, we've talked about it from an academic standpoint. Learning styles is diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people learn differently. And so as we approach how to, you know, support our student athletes. So it really is, I think that's been something that's been, you know, really helpful in our conversations is that there really, there's a lot of depth and breadth to diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's an important that, you know, we really think about that. And, you know, there's so many conversations that we can have. And I think that's really helped everybody to see, you know, that, again, everybody has a part in diversity and contributes, you know, to the diversity of our institution and organization. And, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion is something that touches us all.
Well, we actually met in person at the Black Student Athlete Summit back in May.
We did. We did. That was a phenomenal breakfast that you hosted. Appreciated that and enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. I actually forgot that part. yes. And you know, I'm saying this up public, so hopefully I will get it done. I already booked my hotel room for the next Black Student Athlete Summit. But I need to go get the real ID to fly on the plane.
Yes. Well, get that done. I'll be out there and definitely want to see you again. So.
Oh, yeah. You know, we're going to have this breakfast again. And I appreciate you all just getting up so early and being there. And
that was wonderful.
Great. Thank you. But my question for the listeners, why do you think it was important for you to attend that type of professional development? And what are some other professional development activities do you engage in?
Yeah, so I felt like the Black Student Athlete Summit, that was actually my first time attending. You know,
mm-hmm.
in years past, the summit had been held in early January, which,
right.
you know, typically our academic, you know, we would have started school during that
mm-hmm.
summit, and it was usually like our first or second week whenever it was scheduled. And so it was,
mm-hmm.
especially when I was working in academic services, it was challenging for me to leave as a staff member and then our student athletes who were just getting back to class. So moving it to May was perfect timing for us because we were between semesters. But it was really phenomenal, I think, for the student athletes that I was able to, you know, take. They loved it. In fact, we're planning
mm-hmm.
already. They've been speaking highly of the experience, and we're planning to bring a larger group this year. But for me, it was, number one, just an opportunity to connect with a lot of other professionals who, you know, are doing similar work or the same work at their campus. And so, you know, a lot of us had connected, you know, virtually for the past, you
mm-hmm.
know, couple years. And so it was really an opportunity to have the chance to, you know, really just meet each other in person and just learn from one another. And so I really enjoyed the opportunity. You know, I always try to take advantage of other conferences, the NACTA conferences. I'll usually go to N4A. My role now is situated in human resources, and so I think I'll join CABMA this year, MOA, you know, having the opportunity to do that. I actually had the honor of graduating from the Sports Management Institute a few weeks back. And so that was an excellent, excellent, you know, leadership and professional development experience. And so really was honored to have that opportunity, learned so much, had a wonderful group of colleagues that I went through the program with. So that was great. And then also Women Leaders in College Sports has always been a really exceptional experience as well. So those are some of the professional organizations that I've been a part of. I've also Black Sports Professionals. When I was in the Atlanta area, I was part of that as well. And, you know, I still try to keep in touch with the group. They've revamped a little bit. So it's been exciting to see how that group has grown and, you know, try to stay in touch and be as much engaged with that group as much as I can as well.
Well, speaking of engagement, we appreciate you being a part of the Chat in the Garden membership and engaging and sharing wisdom, because that's what we want to do. We want to grow these leaders, and so that's what we need to do.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's so important. You know, I think looking at, you know, as we think about professional development, I think doing everything that we can as colleagues, you know, especially as women, and, you know, people of color to just really, you know, pour into each other as well and, you know, continue to help uplift. And, you know, it's one of my favorite things that, you know, I often hear is you got to lift as you rise. So as we continue to have, you know, grow in our professions and we can, you know, help each other out as well. And I think that's just really important to, you know, pour into others just as folks have poured into us.
Absolutely. And I just will put this down for you. At NACTA, I usually have a reception at my timeshare, wherever we may be. And so this is usually that Monday after MOA. So make sure you just put me down your schedule. And there's a lot of things happening, but that's where everybody gets a chance to see each other again as well.
Yes, but, I would love that. That would be wonderful.
Yes, but speaking of helping others, I do have a young lady that I'm having a conversation with, and I think you'd be the perfect person for me to be able to cut and paste this podcast for her to listen to. All right, so here's the scenario. Apparently she wants to be in development, player development, and you got some experience with this on the professional side.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like she has experience with student development on the collegiate side. But the issue is that, well, let me ask this question first, then I'll get to the end. Salary-wise, how does the two kind of go? This is student-athlete development. Is it more lucrative to be on the professional side, or is it about the same salary range?
I think it depends. I think generally speaking, there's not, you know, a great disparity. But I also think a lot of it has to do with, you know, what type of professional organization are you in? What type of college institution are you in? So I wouldn't say, you know, that professional sports pays more than collegiate athletics. I think a lot of it, you know, depends on your level and what you're doing, but I don't think there's a great disparity. But, you know, it's also tough to compare because, like I said, I think it depends on, you know, what type of pro league you're in. Like I said, when I was in the NBA G League versus an NBA salary, that's going to be different, you know, or, you know, working with the Atlanta Braves. But, yes, I think they're different, but I don't think, you know, it's not that professional sports is going to necessarily, you know, pay more. I think it just depends on where you are in the organization and the type of organization. That's been my experience thus far.
And see, I just needed somebody to amen me because I was saying it's not going to be much different than what you were doing on as it relates to salary wise. And I just think her thought is that she's going to have more money and more, you know, she just has more money. So the second part is what she should have in the second question. So on the college side, you know, there's not 9 to 5 when you're on the college side. So if you're in development on the professional side for a professional athlete, are you on call 24/7 or do you have, is it more like a corporate hours?
No, I mean, I don't think those jobs are 9 to 5 either, at least from my experience. Because, you know, you got to think about a lot of times when you're engaging with players, it's around, you know, practices or games. It depends on the sport. So, you know, working in baseball, for example, most of our games are evening games. And so, you know, engaging with our players is usually late afternoon, early evening prior to games. And so, you know, I think it depends, you know, colleagues in the NBA, it's similar. So you kind of have to work around their schedule. But, you know, typically it's going to be not 9 to 5 because you're going to be around for different contests, you know, and competition.
Mm-hmm.
So I think whether you're in college or professional and depending on your role, you know, in my community engagement role, I mean, we did a lot at each game. And so that was certainly, you know, it was very similar to my college, you know, experience in that you're working, you know, all different hours, the same in student athlete development. You know, your student athletes, I mean, some will come see you during the day, but, you know, in academics, for example, you know, we rotated as counselors working study hall for in the evenings. And
mm-hmm.
so, and then the evenings was a great opportunity to, you know, have the opportunity to catch with your students because they're finally done with class and practice and everything and they're in the building. And so, you know, now working in this role, I still work a lot of, you know, evenings and weekends because, number one, like I mentioned, I'm going to different athletic contests. Sometimes they may have, you know, something going on or there may be, you know, guests that I'm meeting. And also, you know, we'll have different events, and most of our events are in the evening or late afternoon. So, you know, I don't think there are too many sports jobs. There are some, but I don't know that there's, you know, as many that are, you know, very 9 to 5. Especially once you're, you know, you're working in, I'd say if you're working in units of support, you know, student athletes or professional athletes, it's definitely, you know, I would say not structured as a 9 to 5. Maybe some units that don't have as much engagement may have that possibility, but, you know, everybody works hard across every department. And so I think that's part of working in sports is it's not a traditional schedule, but, you know, it's certainly rewarding.
And that's interesting because the last part you said rewarding. So, I mean, the thing is, you know, when I do executive coaching, I can't impose my own values. So I'm listening to what they say that's important. And I'm like, okay, they want to be in sports, but they talking about this dollar amount they want to receive. Then they want to have a 9 to 5. I'm like, are you being realistic about your wants as it relates to this profession? And so I wanted just to hear somebody else say something that I was similar saying. So thank you so much for that. That was really good info. So now I had this written down, what previous role prepared you for the DEI work, but I think you shared that within your dialogue about your journey, but I kind of just want to tie together what you said, but in a nice little bow, how DEI work really is a student-athlete development.
Well, I mean, I think for us, it's a focus of everyone. So with our student-athletes, you know, I think with everyone, you know, student athletes, coaches, our staff, you know, there's the educational component. So, you know, talking about different topics related to learning, you know, there's a lot of language and terminology and things like that. And so, you know, I think that's something that engages everyone. You know, with our student athletes, we talk a lot about, you know, how they can use their platform of athletics for whatever passion area they have, you know, related to diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so I think from that standpoint, you know, that can be a focus. But I think really for everyone, it's, you know, education engagement and learning around those topics?
Well, I meant from a standpoint, so when I would teach about, because again, me being in the book for 30 years, you know, I would say when we talk about gender issues and being a safe place, I say, because the term we used to use, it was a student athlete welfare issue. It's not about your personal views. It's about giving them a safe place and be protective. And so, and I can say this now because mental health is a big piece. It goes all together. If a person knows that they have a safe place, that will give them a bridge for their mental health to land on instead of just trying to do it all in their head and you know, or be in isolation. And so when we do that type of training from a DEI point, we're preparing you to be that bridge for them to land. And if you're really there for the student athlete, then you will embrace DEI. That's kind of where I'm coming from it, from a standpoint of, yes, your experiences, you know, your personal experiences, you know, may be different, but you need to put those on pause because this is what these young people are dealing with today. So
yes, absolutely, absolutely. You know, I think that is our key, is that we want to, you know, we're here for our student athletes. That's, you know, that's why we all do what we do. And to your point, that's our center and focus. And so, you know, we talk about, you know, we want to create an inclusive athletic environment where, you know, everybody feels, you know, our student athletes feel like they are valued, that they can be authentic, and that, you know, like you said, that they're safe and protected. And so that is a big part of that. And part of that is helping everybody, you know, navigate the different aspects of diversity and realizing that that's our priority. And diversity doesn't mean that we're going to always all agree. But it's also, you know, so we have to, you know, respect our differences and, you know, celebrate our similarities. And so I think, you know, being able to do that in a way, even if there are differences, where we can still, you know, it's all about respect. And so where people feel, our student athletes feel safe and respected and that they're valued is really critical and a key piece of that. So, yes, you're definitely right in that we are all united around creating that type of environment for our student athletes so that they can thrive.
Thank you, thank you. And we're going to take a really, really, really short break here in Chatting and Garden. When we return, we continue talking to Dr. Gay.
Hi, I'm Dr. Janice Hilliard, President and CEO of Hilliard Solutions. Are you interested in entering and advancing in the field of athlete development? Then the 5th Annual Women in Athlete Development Symposium and Networking Event on April 12 through 13 is for you. Since 2019, over 45% of attendees are enjoying their dream job in athlete development. Go to HilliardSolutions.com/symposium today for more information. Looking forward to seeing you online.
Hi, my name is Candy Waller, and I'm the president of the Seawall Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit organization established to enhance the transferable skills of student athletes. We are currently launching a media training course to prepare student athletes to effectively engage with the press and the public. To learn more, email us at info@seawallfoundation.org. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
This is Alva Champion Amaker of ANA Athletic Consulting and Vigilant Safety Training Center. My investment to become a member of the Advanced Academy is one of the best decisions I've made in my business and personal growth journey. Working with Monique has provided the network to connect and collaborate with some phenomenal women and leaders, exposed me to literature for growth and opportunities to share my skill sets and knowledge. Her candid approach in the one-on-one sessions make me more accountable for taking the necessary steps toward my advanced success. Thank you, Monique, and I appreciate you.
Why do colleges support student athletes pursuing every profession except professional sports? Why are they treated as just students when they're athletes, knowing that they need help surviving the lights? I'm Tawana Smith, and as a former Division I and pro athlete and now best-selling author, I've created a transition system specifically for student athletes called Surviving the Lights. For more information, visit www.survivingthelights.com to learn how we can change the game together.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Monique A.J. Smith, here in Chatting the Garden, where significance blooms in athletics and sports. Well, Dr. Gay, you know that I'm big on books, okay? So can you share, I believe Caesar Reads, can you share a book that has assisted you in your leadership?
That's a great question. I read quite a bit about leadership. I'm trying to think of the last leadership book that I read. Honestly, the last one I read was about, it was by Tim Elmore. It was talking about a new kind of diversity that was around some of, you know, like I was mentioning, the generational differences and how to utilize that as a leader. But, you know, I pick up a lot of different things. I like, there's certain books by Valerie Burton that I've always appreciated. Mm-hmm. That have really helped me. I mean, I think I've read all of her books. So she's someone that has consistently kind of helped me, you know, contribute to my leadership and grow in that area.
Those are good. I'm in the midst of studying John Maxwell's The Greatest Leader's Greatest Return, which is producing more leaders. And Tim Elmore comes out of his camp, and
okay. So yes. He
mentions him often. And
he
so.
Does. In fact, he wrote John Maxwell wrote the foreword for Tim Elmore's book that I just read. So, yes, they are definitely, you know, aligned, and it's interesting to see, you know, Tim's work around diversity and leadership.
Yeah. Now that would be interesting to read, because I've never heard John Maxwell talk about that per se, you know, not directly. And so just kind of what I was just saying, like diversity is a student-athlete welfare issue, and so diversity is a leadership issue because, again, from a business standpoint, if you want to – today's economy – it's a disrupt economy, which means somebody had to have a diversity of thought to become disruptive. And can we say Uber? You know, can we say Netflix? You know, can we say Amazon? You know, somebody had to think differently than the norm. And I tell my students, you know, you're going to be the next, because you all automatically think differently, and that means you're not to be stifled. I need you to be comfortable speaking up.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. And just I was thinking while you were talking about some of the other books I've read, you know, I enjoy Daniel Goleman's work around emotional intelligence. I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of leadership. I've read Good to Great. I do think that is one of those books that you can really take a lot of from. I like some of Stephen Covey's work. And then there was a book called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a really exceptional book as well. So those are some others that, you know, I've really, you know, been able to pull from through the years. But I'm always on the lookout for a leadership book. So I'm glad to hear of your recommendations as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think John Maxwell. Because I'm actually using that with our membership group called the Advanced Academy. We
mm-hmm.
meet every third Sunday at 9 o'clock. And I'll just take one piece out of it and then, you know, allow that to start our conversation around. And what we talked about was delegation. There's a, you know, for strong leaders, they always think that they're the only ones that can really do it. It's got to be done. And if I give it, it's still got to be done the way that I would do it. And you can't move up unless you have somebody under you that can replace you. And doesn't mean replacing you and how you do it. So you got to let that perfectionist go.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's important. And it gives people opportunities as well. So. To grow their skills. So that's really critical too.
Yeah, that's and that's we talked about how what's your succession plan? You know, and another thing they said, John Maxwell talks about having a leadership table and have the visitation before you cast a vision. So that you can hear what everyone has said. And it's not like you pick the next leader. You need to let everybody have the opportunity from a leadership table, but the people that will rise to the top will be obvious. But you want to be able to do that in a sense of, because I think we're getting away from the elitist, meaning you have been appointed and anointed, versus listening to everyone and whoever has the best ideas will rise to the top. It's not who got the ear. You know, you only got two ears, so who's on the right and the left. If you at the table, your ears can hear all of it versus the two that are right at your right and left. So I think that's not a new concept, but one that this needs to be reframed. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. That
yeah.
makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so that's the latest that I'm on, and I usually stick with one for at least a quarter. So I can, now I'm reading more than one book at a time, trust me. But for this one, it's more like a textbook kind of studying it kind of sort of. So that's my recommendation.
All right. I look forward to checking that out. Thank you so much.
And thank you for joining me today. It has been a pleasure having this chat.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed it. And again, thank you for having me. It's been an honor and really a good, I've enjoyed this chat as well and learned quite a bit myself.
Wonderful, wonderful. I'd like to thank our engineer, Jama Harrison of Refined Solutions for updates on these books that I'm going to post in the group. Join us in a Facebook's A Chat in the Garden with Monique J. Smith. And join us next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And again, for updates on show guests and podcasts, follow us on Facebook's A Chat in the Garden with Monique A. J. Smith. And have a significant rest of the day.